Welcome back to the Hollywood Casino Press Box featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. Natural delight, every border was
dancing in the moonlight. Breaking, Joe Lordo, Missouri Baking Company,
oh boy.
Just left the hill, probably only about 12 minutes. So about 11:40.
I just said, I bet he's on his way.
Well, we're supposed to have Commish at 11:30, so it might be a shortened hit with yeah. the Hummel.
Commish, thanks for your time.
It's got the Cincy. All right, thanks for your time.
My guy Tom says, tell Frank, I was just at Kimmel's last week. It's not six, it's three or four, but they're great. Oh. I didn't know what the six was.
Meatballs.
Meatballs, okay, but
they're bigger, they feel like six. Okay. All right, let's welcome to the program Dr. Patrick Risch. And we are joined by Dr. Patrick Risch when he's in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, or the Ozarks. He's always in some great city around the world or country. Where are you today?
I'm here in Los Angeles talking to you from the W Lounge. You know, Teresa and I can't work together in the same space, so I generously let her work at the apartment, and I come out here and work from the rough surroundings of the W Lounge.
The W Lounge? Is that like – tell me more about this.
Oh, just the W Hotel. It's in Westwood. It's by UCLA.
Oh.
So it's actually kind of funny. This summer when I come in here, work 4 or 5 days a week, in the mornings I see guys from the Toronto Raptors, the Detroit Pistons that are out here just practicing, getting ready for the upcoming basketball season.
Very nice. All right. Let's talk about the economics of this move, Dr. Risch. What do you think, like, in terms of, like, stadium sponsorship, what that could be worth? And then how about jersey sponsorship too?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, what great news. I think we all saw this coming the last couple of months, and it's so great to now get it across the finish line. Looking at, first of all, Frank, the stadium naming rights. So there isn't a lot of publicly available data out there on what some of the deals are. One that is out there that's probably on the high end of benchmarking is the LAFC and their Bank of California Stadium, which is a beautiful facility, second year of existence. They're getting $100 million over 15 years, so that's $7.5 million annually. If you look at what's going on across the rest of the league, I would say that most of the deals in the league probably range in the $3 to $5 million annually. And my sense is that one of the things, and someone pointed this out to me this morning, a source of mine mentioned that the fact that the stadium will be close to 6440 will actually raise the profile and visibility and bang for the buck that any corporate partner would get out of a naming rights deal, just because it is much more visible as compared to, let's say, the deal that SeatGeek just did with the Chicago Fire. That's all the way out in, I think it's Bridgeview, and so no one really sees that. It's in the middle of nowhere. So my sense is that if we're talking about that $3 to $5 million range annually, that it's possible that we could get to the higher end of that range, in part because of the visibility afforded by being so close to a major thoroughfare.
How about jersey sales, the name on the front?
Yeah, great question, Martin. And again, some information I received this morning from a couple sources. So the LA Galaxy, which is the other team, of course, here, the most successful team in Major League Soccer, they've had a longstanding partnership with Herbalife, and they have a $5 million annual deal with Herbalife. In contrast, you take the Minnesota team, which is relatively new, they have a $3 million deal with Target. So it's not a lot of variability there. It's interesting, right? L.A. obviously is much larger than the Minnesota market. Minnesota market is closer to ours, and yet there's only a $2 million difference annually in what those two clubs are getting. So I would say, again, based on just that little comp, I would say that we probably are going to come in closer to the $3 million range annually from the jersey deal. So you add the two of them together, and you're looking at somewhere between $7 and $8 million in revenue from just those two sources.
What's your sense on the league? We were talking to Bill McDermott, also a big fan of the league, of, you know, the MLS, but there has been some thoughts that they don't make money and that, you know, is that a franchise you can make money off of? What do you think about the league long term?
Well, Martin, I think that the league long-term is going to be viable, and I do understand the concerns that there are some markets that struggle, and let's hope that St. Louis isn't one of those. I think that there are various reasons why we can hope to believe that we won't be one of the ones that struggle financially, and the Taylors and Jim Cavanaugh are a big part of that, and I think the fan base and the corporate support will be the other part of it. But my take on this, Martin and Frank, is that the way that people consume sports and the sports that people are following has changed over the years. We are all about the same age, and we've seen the change. Now, I still don't get the esports. I can watch it, and I get a headache, but people have shorter attention spans, and this kind of bleeds into actually a positive benefit for soccer, because soccer takes the least amount of time. It's a two-hour time commitment at most. You know, I love football, but I hate watching football on TV because it takes too damn long. That's just a consideration that a lot of younger people, that's going to be part of it. And the other part of it, guys, is that there's a communal aspect to the sport of soccer with the singing that goes on in the stands and that kind of fan engagement that the millennials and the Gen Zers are really keen on, something that maybe didn't hit our generation or our parents' generation. So I think all of these societal factors are going to make soccer that much more attractive, and I think that the upcoming rights deals that they sign at the media, because let's face it, guys, the media rights, that's what drives the bus in all these leagues. Media rights will go up in Major League Soccer. It's just a question of how much and how soon.
So for our baseball fans who really don't follow the MLS, soccer, we're going to get 16 home games, regular season, and then two, I guess, preseason games. So 32 total regular season games, is that how it works? And then the postseason?
I believe right now, Frank, it's at 34, so you're close, 17 home games. And I don't know if they plan on expanding the schedule once you're adding these additional teams, because, you know, we're ultimately going to get the 30 teams, and I suspect it's going to be Sacramento and Charlotte. What I hope, and again, in St. Louis, this isn't going to be a hard sell, guys. We know it's a soccer community. It's endemic to the fabric of the St. Louis community. But what I hope is true is there are a lot of teams out there that have really set high bars. Obviously, in Atlanta, you know, they're playing in Mercedes-Benz, and they're drawing all these people. But more comparably, out here in L.A., this new club, LAFC, I dare somebody to point out a better fan engagement experience than at their matches. And that's the bar that St. Louis has to try to match, by having people in there singing and chanting and just living and breathing the sport. It's going to bring excitement to the venue. It's going to bring people to the matches. And that's what it's going to take to turn a profit, is to make sure, again, the fan support, the corporate support is strong.
Patrick Risch, sports economist, WashU, by way of his satellite offices at the W in Los Angeles. So an interesting thought, and Frank has brought this up before, the season itself in the MLS is sort of parallel to Major League Baseball. So do you think the Cardinals have any concerns? My theory is that they're such a power, they're not really worried. They're happy there's another team in town. It doesn't really affect them. However, you're talking about maybe a younger demo that likes the MLS. So you may not be competing, but you might envy that sort of fan where you want to get a little of that younger crowd.
I think you just hit it on the head, Martin. I don't think they're worried. They've got issues that a new soccer team isn't going to necessarily have any impact on. Baseball itself is seeing an aging of the sport, and I think they need to do some radical things to make the sport more attractive to younger fans. But I do see them, and going back to that point, because the revenues involved in baseball, the media revenues are so strong, you know, the Cardinals aren't going to be hurting anytime soon. But because it's a soccer community, you've got some small businesses, mid-sized businesses that may prefer to invest in partnerships with soccer than other sports, because you know, maybe the owner of that business is a soccer enthusiast. Maybe he played soccer growing up. Or from a business perspective, maybe they realize that it caters better to younger fans. And most businesses, strategically, they want to capture the younger fan because they want to make that person, that consumer, a lifelong customer. So, yeah, Cardinals aren't going to sweat it, but there certainly is going to be some envy. There's no question of that.
What does each team get television revenue-wise from their package? Do you know?
I'd have to look at the overall number for the league, Frank, and sorry I didn't look it up before I got on. It's obviously it pales in comparison even to National Hockey League, which is the weakest sibling of the four major sports in the U.S., although hockey has seen growth as well. I don't believe that number could be any more than certainly shouldn't be more than $10 million a year. It's probably somewhere between $5 and $10 million a year from the national TV deal, Frank.
Good stuff, Dr. Risch. You enjoy California. We'll see you back in St. Louis soon.
I'll be back very soon, guys. Semester starts the 26th. I'll be back next week.
All right. Dr. Patrick Risch joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box.
He carved out a nice niche, hasn't he?
Oh,
he
has.
Being a sports economist, and then he goes on these. I always wanted to have a job where there's a sabbatical. You know, Frank won't be doing the sports for the next 5 months. He's on a sabbatical.
Oh,
but
my
where
gosh.
Is he? He's visiting some of the sports shops in Europe for 6 months.
It's like these kids. Have you gone studied abroad somewhere?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Hallie, the intern from Ole Miss and Altoff High School. Where did you go?
I went to Prague earlier this summer for a month.
Oh, I can think of other things in Prague. But what was Prague, what was that like? Okay.
It was really nice. It was hot. It was so hot. There's no air conditioning in Europe.
Really?
Okay. Well, maybe in nice
these
hotels, but we're
kids,
staying
Frank.
In.
Yeah. Set overseas for the summer. But people will do a semester in Barcelona, in Madrid, and in London. I had friends who went to Dublin you imagine that?
Yeah, I was too busy. I was in Kirksville playing against Northeast Missouri State.
Eating at a Bonanza with Bob McCormick.
That's right.
Hey, one of our great sponsors is Appliance Discounters. They now have a 7th location. That's the one serving the Maplewood-Richmond Heights area. It's off of Cleed Station Road, Deer Creek Plaza. And what is unique there is what they're calling the art of appliance. These bold, unique colors for your next appliance purchase. So if you want to do something a little new and bold, stop by that location. You can go online, theappliancediscounters.com. They're all around the St. Louis area. Webster Groves, South County, Baldwin, St. Charles, City of St. Louis, Fairview Heights, Illinois, theappliancediscounters.com. And it's real simple. They are carrying the biggest names at the lowest prices. GE, Frigidaire, Samsung, LG, you name it, they have it. Lowest prices, theappliancediscounters.com, where their savings are your savings.
The Hall of Famer Rick Hummel comes to us courtesy of Lakeside Roofing once a week. Kamish, good to be with you. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, guys. How are you?
Very good. Much to discuss. First of all, we have a little running bet here. We're betting scones, actually. On what Michael Wacha's
line. We've really
line,
upped the ante around yes, here.
What Michael Wacha's line is going to be tonight. You give us innings and runs, please, sir.
Well, I think he'll 5 innings, maybe 3 or 4 runs. His season has been bad this year, but his record here is unbelievable. His ERA is 2.5. In this ballpark, that's 2.5 an inning usually for a lot of pitchers.
And do you have a sense, if they weren't in Cincinnati, that let's just say it's another ballpark, that he's not making that start?
Possibly, yeah. But here's a guy at 7-1 here and 12-1 against the Reds. I know those teams change personnel from year to year, but still, that ballpark to be 7-1 and winning his last 7 decisions is pretty impressive.
How do you analyze it? Because on the gun, he's still throwing as hard almost as he ever has. Maybe not 99, but up there at 97.
Well, his location hadn't been very good, and he's walked more than he should. When you're going badly, you generally make one bad pitch that you don't get back. Like you walk a couple guys, and suddenly it's a 3-run homer. And you might do pretty well the rest of the outing, but you've given up 3 runs on one pitch. And he needs to just get some innings together where he doesn't have any traffic on the bases. Get his pitch count up, because he can go 90-100 pitches, but you don't want that to be in 4 innings. You want it to be in 6.
If he struggles, what do you think the plan is next time out? Are we looking at a piggyback start? Does Helsley get a chance? What do you think plan B is?
Well, if Ponce de Leon has another good start in the minors, I think it's about time for him to be pitching today, too. He'll be back, because he had a start last weekend, 11 strikeouts in a 15-0 game. He allowed 2 hits in 7 innings. So, he's ready down there. Now, will he be ready up here? I don't know, but you'd bring him back. If they don't do that, Helsley would be involved in the game somehow tomorrow, one way or the other, I think, anyway.
Gut feel, what's the starting outfield look like tonight?
Well, Ozuna will be in there. I think Fowler will be in there. And I think Rosarena will be in there, just like last night. I think the lineup would be virtually the same, if not the same. There's enough time. There's four games here. I would play Thomas a couple games and Rosarena a couple games because Thomas didn't do anything to come out of the lineup. He knocked in five runs on Sunday. He scored one of the two runs they had on Tuesday. It was kind of one of those two runs. And he's hitting 360. So, and he was considered, when the year started, probably the better prospect of the two. So, and he hasn't taken any steps back necessarily. Just that Rosarena had that great year, and he deserves to have that chance. But I don't think he deserves yet to be an everyday player over Lane Thomas, who's done just as well and a little bit more sample size.
Commish, how about level of shock when they fired Mark Badaska, who we've heard them rave about for years, and you talked to a number of players, you talked to Mike Schilt. Give me a sense of what led to that.
I think there are two different voices. There's Jeff Albert and Badaska's, and they both know a lot about hitting, but it seems that they didn't get together on what they should do collectively. You know, Badaska had these ideas for hitters, and Albert had his ideas for hitters, and there wasn't the meshing of philosophy as you should. Like, you know, you'd want to have two different voices. You want to have one voice, and Badaska was the hitting coach, you know, the head hitting coach for the last half of last season when Mabry was fired, interim hitting coach, you should say, and then he was dropped down to assistant this year, so he was not the head hitting coach. And Albert is, and the head hitting coach is always going to survive that one, especially in his first year when he was highly sought after and brought in. So I think it's not much more complicated than that, but Schilt didn't like the vibe he was feeling between these two guys or players saying, hey, what are we doing here? You know, which way are we going to go? And one says one says this, one says that, and it was just too much confusion for Schilt, so he made the move. And Schilt and Badaska go back a dozen years, so that wasn't easy.
I thought it was interesting that Schilt made it very clear that it was his call because, you know, I think we all like him and see him as a good guy, but I don't know if people have seen him in that role yet where he's had to make a tough decision to fire somebody. I thought that was notable, and I don't know that he was taking pressure off the front office because in the past, Mozeliak has orchestrated a lot of these things, but did you find that notable?
Well, I asked the question, and because he had said something right at the start of his interview the other night in the dugout that you know, I didn't want to do this. And I said, did you make this decision? He said, yeah, this is mine. He said, well, signed off on it, but this is my decision. And that did surprise me a little bit. I had assumed it had come from the front office, but I do not believe that to be the case.
All right, Commish, let's move to another topic. And I think it's one of the more interesting ones in baseball right now, the Chicago Cubs and their road woes. In fact, let me lead it off with this. As we speak on this Thursday morning, if you had to bet a scone on who's going to win the division, who would you bet?
Well, I would still take the Cubs, I think, but that doesn't mean that the Cardinals can't win it. The Cubs are a very strong home team now. They do have to play half their games at home, too, and they don't lose very often there. The road thing is crazy because it isn't like they have a team built only for Wrigley Field. They got some good players. Bryan and Rizzo and Baez and those guys are good players anywhere. But Cole Hamels was horrible in his return to Philadelphia last night for the first time in 4 years. And they lost two out of four to the Reds here last week. And they have another game, I believe, with the Phillies today. So they will have to win some games on the road, especially the last 3 days of the season when the Cubs close the season in St. Louis. They also have some games with the Brewers. And this weekend, the Cubs have some games with Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh has won a couple this week, but they're ripe for the taking. Now, one game is in Williamsport. So you really can't predict how those games are going to go on Sunday night. So maybe the Pirates will be fired up to show the youngsters how to play ball, or maybe not to play ball. I don't know.
Not based on their recent body of work, I don't know if the Pirates are fired up about much. Clint Hurdle might be asking to leave soon.
Well, he's got two more years on the deal. If he had only 1 year left, I think they'd make a move. But he's signed through 21. It shouldn't have come to this. Their pitching has been battered. They had a pretty good staff, but they've had some injuries. And then they lost Polanco, the real good right fielder, again with an injury. Their offense, they have this, like the second or third top batting average in the league. They score, but they give up too, and their defense is not very good. So that's where they get beat, especially their infield defense. First base, Josh Bell is a wonderful player, but he's awful at first base. And the shortstop is a little shaky. Third base is all right. Second base, so-so. They give up a lot of runs. And Cervelli, the good catcher, has been out much of the year with a concussion. They aren't this bad, but they didn't seem to have much bounce in their step last weekend at St. Louis. You're right.
I love your 270 stat, that if Wong doesn't hit 270, first time since 1907, they won't have a 270 hitter or above. That's crazy.
That's how the game has changed, I guess. He's at 270 now, I think. But if other guys get to 270, they're going to run away with this thing, because Goldschmidt's coming from 260. Ozuna's coming from 252 or 253 or whatever. DeYoung's at 250. Carpenter's at 220. If a couple, three of those guys ever get to 250, this thing's over. I mean, 270, I should say, 270.
Hey, one final thought. I think we've talked about this before, that I've said that if DeYoung keeps this up, he could end up being the second best post-World War II shortstop in Cardinal history. And I know Edgar Renteria did great things, not a long period of time in St. Louis. And then somebody suggested Marty Marion, who did have a wonderful career. But, you know, Paul DeYoung hit, you know, Marty Marion had 36 career home runs. Paul DeYoung, you know, has 36 home runs like in a year and a half sometimes. So what do you think? I know it's early in his career. Do you think we'll be saying that about DeYoung?
Oh, sure. Now, Marion's career kind of, a lot of his career was during the war years, not necessarily after or before. His best years were during the war years, probably. See, the difference in DeYoung from what we saw 2 years ago is what an accomplished fielder he is. He's first in the league in fielding. He's first in the league in double plays. Now, I know a lot of that is because he plays the most games at that position, probably. But still, he made a couple of nice plays last night. That makes him a better player than his 250 and 20 home runs when he's going to make plays like that. He and Wong are very stylish and maybe the best combination since Ozzie and her for here, you know. Vina and Renteria were good, but I think Ozzie and her were better. And DeYoung and Wong remind me more of Ozzie and her anyway. Nobody's going to remind you of Ozzie, but I mean, Wong is the best second baseman of all those guys I discussed.
Good stuff, Kamish. Thanks so much. We'll see you back in St. Louis shortly. Thank you, sir.
You bet, guys. Thank you.
All right. The Kamish brought to you by Lakeside Roofing, established in 72, solid reputation for excellence in the roofing industry. Their philosophy is focused around a relentless commitment to customer service, quality products, and outstanding workmanship. Lakeside Roofing's reputation is one of reliability, trust, high-quality work, and competitive pricing. They feature the finest quality roofing materials and provide expert installation. In Illinois, call 618-344-2800. In Missouri, call 314-241-5253. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.